We've got it all, and we're getting more, but we never fall. Beat them all, because you know we're so humble. We're Cull-humble-ia house party. Jake, I'm going to end it there. This is a disaster.
You think that's the last opening lyric now?
Cull-humble-ia house party? Yeah,
Cull-humble-ia.
There's a smoother way to work the word humble into Cull-humble-ia house party. It's very close.
Cull-humble-ia, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, guys. We're giving you this. So
It's the distance. It's a distance. You don't have the like proximity to me and Dylan to motivate it.
I don't have my 1 hour at Tearo before we record in the studio to center myself and figure out exactly how I'm going to drop the opening lyric.
That's right.
In the hopes of offering levity, the idea behind this one was that maybe we could mention in the Discord that we were doing it a couple days ahead of time, and we could essentially do like a group watch along. Not actually, we can't all, you know, log into Zoom and watch the same screen, especially since the film in question today is no longer on Canadian Netflix. However, hopefully you guys have watched or know the film well enough, because if not, this is going to be the weirdest 45, 50 minutes of Cull-humble-ia House Party that you've listened to. It was a lot of fun to prep for this one. Did you rewatch it, Jake, or are you going all off memory for how many times you've watched Popstar?
Yeah, I feel like I did not rewatch it this week, but I rewatched it somewhat recently. So it's pretty fresh in my brain. I've also now seen it. I'm not sure if I've quite hit like the 10 time mark, but I've seen it a good chunk of times now that I think I have. It's one of those movies that I think I didn't expect it to be a movie that would end up being in my, like, I've watched this so many times and it's like lodged in my brain now, but it did. And it is.
Yeah, I believe the impetus for this was you actually tweeted out the Bin Laden song to try to put it in everyone else's head since it was in yours.
Yeah, Cassie and I had a Friday night a couple weeks ago where we just ended up watching random YouTube videos till like 5 in the morning. And we, as usually happens when you're doing those like, let's watch videos kind of thing, The Lonely Island, of course, came up because it's easy content.
Of course.
And then for the next 2 weeks, because Lonely Island, it was stuck in my head. And I had to share it with the world to maybe make someone else have it stuck in their head too.
Yeah, that's not particularly noble of you, but you know, I understand.
No, well, I've never claimed to be a noble person.
That's true. That's true. I like the don't help me get this out of my head. I'm gonna put it in your head too. It's very parallel to your mixtape strategy of, hey, this is what I'm listening to. You have to. This has to be the soundtrack to your inner monologue now too.
I'm hoping that if I get stuck in someone else's head, that like transits it out of my head, which I don't think is how it works, but that's the hope.
It doesn't work that way. No. If you haven't figured it out yet, today we're doing something kind of like a regular episode, but not really. We're going to explore a fictional album. I say fictional because it was created through a fictional movie. However, there is actually a real four-sided album that you can purchase on thelonelyisland.com. We're covering the subject of the 2016 mockumentary, Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, Connor For Real's Conquest.
Watch out! I've got it all, and I'm getting more, but I never thought I'd beat them all, cause you know I'm so humble. I'm a superstar, I kick down the door, got the money and the bills, and I'm also so humble.
I'm so humble.
I'm so humble. I'm so humble. I'm so humble.
Bar none, I am the most humblest. Number one at the top of the humblest. My apple crumble is by far the most crumblest. But I act like it tastes bad out of humbleness. The thing about me that's so impressive is how infrequently I mention all of my successes. I poo-poo it when girls say that I should model. My belly's full from all the pride I swallow. I'm the most courteous, biddable, hospitable, reverential, normalary, Arnold Schwarzeneggerary. I hate compliments, put them in a mortuary. I'm so ordinary that it's truly quite extraordinary.
I've got it all, and I'm getting more, but I never thought I'd beat them all, cause you know I'm so humble.
I say that with no ego.
I'm so humble.
It's just good manners.
See, I'm a 10, but I'm a native best. Plus two says you're not me.
I'm sure to this point you've heard a Lonely Island song, you've seen a Lonely Island digital short on Saturday Night Live, you're surely familiar with Andy Samberg of the Lonely Island at least, but in case you're not, let's give you a little background here before we get into pop star and Connor for real. Take you back to the 90s, and Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Jorma Taccone are friends as far back as junior high in Berkeley, California, friends through high school. They all pursued the arts, and then after college, they reconnected to discuss, you know, are we going to be real adults and enter the workforce? Are we going to keep being goofs and find a way to monetize that? So in September 2000, they moved to LA with the idea that they would make short films. They pretty quickly found a groove where they would make comedic rap songs and upload them online. And then, you know, as creatives do, they tried a lot of stuff. They tried to pitch The Lonely Island as a TV series. Allegedly, this is a funny, like, it's on the Wikipedia page. I don't know if it's an urban legend or just, you know, something that happened or something that they leak out there to because it's a funny story. As they were shooting a video where they mug an old lady, Kiefer Sutherland tried to intervene, not realizing it was a bit.
Were they behind The Boo? Was that them? The OC ripoff with Sarah Chalk?
Yeah, they sure were. So they tried to get The Lonely Island off the ground as a TV series at first. Didn't really happen. They're working side jobs. They eventually repitched The Lonely Island show to Comedy Central. It got purchased, but didn't move forward. Then they do The Boo, which is a fairly funny OC parody and gets them a little bit of notice, but their pitches kept getting passed on. They couldn't get something to click until the 2005 MTV Movie Awards, when they were hired on as writers. Jimmy Fallon hosted and loved them, spoke their praises to Tina Fey. Fast forward, they get an SNL audition. Andy Samberg gets hired as a feature player, and Taccone and Schaefer get hired as writers. October 1st, 2005, Samberg makes his feature player debut at the same time as Bill Hader. What a rookie class.
The good old days. As they're all the good old days till they're not.
The last good cast members they had. That's not true. But the first couple months with them writing and Samberg as a feature player didn't go particularly well. Most of their sketches weren't getting used. There seemed to be, in reading back about it, there seems to be this kind of divide between, you know, the type of humor of people who were raised in the internet age and the type of humor SNL was at that point. Eventually, they get their first breakthrough. They kind of do their own thing and film Lazy Sunday with Chris Parnell, which becomes a breakthrough hit. That's obvious. That's the one that, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia. It was a very, very big success.
I think that was the first time they sort of, I had found The Boo, but I never like connected that it was the same guys, like way, way back.
Right.
So I think Lazy Sunday was my first like exposure to, like, or wider exposure, being like, what is, something is happening. What are these people? What is happening?
Right. And at that point, it's like not even clear that they're a group necessarily, just because like all they presented as is an SNL digital short and it's Samberg and Parnell. Unless you already knew The Lonely Island, you might not know. But the success of that short was so big that it got a lot of media coverage, and it was kind of, they were championed as leading SNL into the modern age and being this new thing that could kind of keep SNL funny and hip as the kind of internet age picked up, to the extent that Lorne Michaels like didn't get it. So they just gave them autonomy over the SNL digital shorts. They were just like, you guys do this. I don't get it, but you do what you need to there. They followed up Lazy Sunday with Natalie's Rap with Natalie Portman, which is one of the best SNL sketches ever, I think.
So good.
They had Dick in a Box with Justin Timberlake, which not only got millions of views and viral success, it was nominated for an Emmy. I think it actually won an Emmy.
Not to sound like too much of a boomer, but I feel like they were the like first viral or like very early viral content on the internet that I can remember.
At least that's something that like an establishment media like SNL.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you had some things like the Derek Comedy Guys, which like featured Donald Glover and Bobby Moynihan and stuff very early on. It was kind of like that stuff reaching the mainstream.
Yeah, because like Dick in a Box was everywhere.
Yeah, those are immense success. My brother dressed up as one of the Dick in a Box guys for Halloween last year. Like that, you can't do that costume 15 years later.
I definitely didn't expect you to end that sentence with last year.
Yeah. Yeah, not a great Halloween costume. So obviously they're picking up steam and media coverage for coming up with these incredibly witty and very popular and viral sketches. In 2009, they decide to go all the way in on that and release an actual album called Incredibad. Their SNL profile and the digital shorts that accompanied the album Incredibad, it really helped the exposure. They had, basically, their singles were also digital shorts and then YouTube viral sensations as well. They had the Jizz in My Pants song, which I'm sure people remember. They had features from E40, Jack Black, Julian Casablancas, Norah Jones, Timberlake, Portman, and on one of their biggest tracks, T-Pain on I'm on a Boat.
Stay on your motherfucking toes. We running this, let's go.
I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the motherfucking boat. I'm on a boat, motherfucker. Take a look at me. Straight floating on a boat on the deep blue sea. Busting by night, wind whipping out my coat. You can't stop me, motherfucker.
Drink. I'm on a boat, bitch. We drinking Santana champ, cause it's so crisp. I got my swim trunks and my flippin' floppies. I'm flipping burgers, you at Kinko's, straight flipping cabbage.
I'm riding on a dolphin, doing flips and shit. This dolphin splashing, getting everybody away. But this ain't SeaWorld, this is real as it gets. I'm on a boat, motherfucker, don't you ever forget.
I'm on a boat, and it's going fast, and I got an nautical theme. Patch me to Afghan. I'm the king of the world on a boat like Leo. If you own the show, then you show not me. Oh,
get the fuck up. This boat is real.
Never thought I'd see the day when a big boat's coming my way. Need me when I say I bought the mermaid.
I'm on a boat.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat.
I can't believe T-Pain didn't use that when he was having his Instagram live against Lil Jon the other day. How do you not pull that one out, man?
Be a deep cut.
It would be a deep cut.
Although I guess not at the time. At the time, it was like fucking everywhere.
I was going to say, not only was it everywhere, it went double platinum as a single and got nominated for a Grammy.
That's wild.
Incredibad was also the number 8 best-selling hip-hop album of 2009.
Man, we'll get into this a bit later. I love their like album thing, but if you recontextualize Incredibad sort of in the context of Popstar, I enjoy it way more.
Yeah, you almost have to look at everything they've done as like one giant bit.
Yeah. Totally.
So following the success of Incredibad in 2009, they released Turtleneck and Chain in 2011 and the Whack album in 2013. Those continue to have a lot of features, digital shorts, you know, Kendrick's on a track, which is, you get Kendrick on a comedy track. Come on. They also, on the side, collaborated on the writing of Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie.
Great song.
So if you want them to use their stupidity for good, there you go. And in 2007, so prior to Incredibad, but while they were doing the SNL stuff, they also made Hot Rod, which is a revered cult classic. It did not do particularly well, but you take the cult success of Hot Rod, showing that, hey, our sense of humor can work over 90 minutes. You take the success of Incredibad and the digital shorts, you put them together with all the other TV and movie writing credits and directing and producing and acting that the three of them have done, and a full-length movie built around their music kind of makes sense. So, here is where normally we would get into the making of the album. Instead, we're going to pivot and give you the background on Connor for real. We have to get into the movie a little bit. Jake, before we do that, initial thoughts going in, just, you know, we'll break down some of the specifics about comedy music and pop star in general. But, you know, obviously this is a weird format and a weird episode. So any thoughts heading into where we're going to go here with the Style Boys and Connor for
yeah,
real?
Yeah, this movie and sort of everything around it took me really by surprise. Like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of like a lot of their songs. I thought a lot of their shorts that weren't music were really funny. And I liked a lot of those, but I didn't love their songs. And then I remember going to see this movie just kind of like, I wasn't like really excited for it. I wasn't a big Lonely Island guy. And then like halfway through, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And I think it's exactly what you were just alluding to, in the sense that their sense of humor and their style lending itself to a music mockumentary. It's kind of like, how did they not start there? Obviously they had to build up their name, but it just makes so much sense. And I think the reason it works so well is because it is like, it's so in their wheelhouse.
The reason they don't start there is because you probably can't get like Nas and ASAP Rocky and Usher when you're first starting out. Although apparently a lot of the songs like that, even the ones that include features from like big artists, were just like done in their office on like a $500 mic. It's like they're, and then they just produced them themselves, at least the early versions, which is crazy because one of the big draws, I think, of the Lonely Island and the music in Popstar is that it all sounds like really good music, or if it's not your taste in music, it all sounds like music that could absolutely be radio music. They just have ludicrous lyrics on top of it.
Yeah, like their ability to write a legitimate pop track is one of, I don't want to say it's surprising because they've done it so consistently that like even the songs I don't love from the early days are still all kind of bangers. And then to like hear them, like all this, the reason these songs get stuck in your head is because they're all really well crafted, really well done pop songs.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go into the movie now. So to give you some background, if you haven't seen the movie, and even if you have, to refresh you, this parallels the actual Lonely Island pretty closely. You have childhood friends Owen, Lawrence, and Connor. They come up and they have some success as a rap group with hits like Karate Guy. Connor, you find out, is a musical prodigy, and they show a clip of him playing, like just kicking ass on drums as a baby, which is obviously a spoof on Justin Bieber. However, despite the fact that like when this came out, I saw a lot of things like, oh, it's like a Bieber mockumentary. It's like, no, it's a pretty amalgamated parody of like everyone in the music industry, but that scene is absolutely taken right from the Justin Bieber backstory. shout out to Stratford, Ontario.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, it was sort of billed by people who liked it as like Spinal Tap for our generation, and I was like, come on. But then you go and see it and you have these shots that are clearly parodying like a Bieber documentary and just like a lot of the sort of music industry jokes in the movie, and you're like, oh no, this is actually a really perfect send up of like dumb pop music.
Yeah. And then you also have, you know, a fairly, you know, it's not, it doesn't happen with every group, but this has happened a couple times where you have the group and then Connor features on a big track sung by Emma Stone, on which Connor raps the catchphrase verse. The song blows up. Connor starts to get some pub as a, and some buzz as a solo artist. And then he never credits Lawrence for writing it, which fractures the group. Lawrence goes off to be a weed and goat farmer. Connor goes solo. Owen shifts to becoming Connor's DJ and producer. So Connor releases his first album, which is has the best album title of all time, Thriller also, which is... Oh, man. I honestly think if the album that they had for sale on thelonelyisland.com was Thriller Also instead of Conquest, I would have bought it by now. Like, just to have Thriller Also on the record shelf.
It is a great title. And like, there's so many little throwaway gags like this in this movie, which is a thing I love dearly in comedies. So, yeah, it's a good one for sure.
We're just going to beat you over the head with jokes so there'll be enough funny stuff in here no matter what. So the success of Thriller also makes Connor one of the biggest pop stars in the world. His highly anticipated follow-up He does something, you know, we've talked on the actual episodes about how sometimes people want to change their sound, or as you come up, you can get a little more label muscle or producer muscle. So Connor goes all the way into that, doesn't take any more of Owen's beats, instead gets 100 producers for his 17 track album, which is a lot.
This is the part of the movie where I feel like I have to bring up how quietly but brilliantly funny Jorma and Akiva are in this movie, and how, like, obviously Sandberg does a lot of the heavy lifting because he's in basically every scene, but the other two on the side just play those characters, especially Akiva Schaffer. He's so funny in this movie to me.
Yeah, they're both great. Like the interplay of just like poor sad Owen is just like trying to be a good friend and trying to keep everyone together, and thinks him parent trapping them to get them back together is an original idea. It's very, his character is very adorable through all of this. So in addition to using 100 producers, Connor also tries to get outside of his comfort zone lyrically, and instead of just rapping about the things that he knows, he tries to be a little bit woke. He tries to make a difference, which leads him to release Equal Rights as Conquest's lead single.
Discrimination, it ain't right. I'm not gay, but if I was, I would want equal rights. I'm not gay, but if I were, I would marry who I like. It's not fair, I'm not gay, that the government has to say in who can love who not gay, or to which god you can pray on a gay. It gets me so angry on behalf of them. I feel passionate, not gay, so I pray for them and I say for them, we need to make a change, not gay. I see it clear as day, this area is not great titties. We need equality and for all to see that this is the new way. Not gay, it just seems not gay, wrong, not gay, that no one seems to care. Sports, we can't continue to pretend this not gay madness has to end.
No, I'm not a hero,
I'm just a person,
so don't call me a hero,
not some kind of world leader.
I just want equal rights,
yeah,
in a sleeping bag,
yeah,
next to a girl.
True love trumps all predator, flying kicks not gay, big watch not gay, missionary one love, gym socks nunchuck a not gay, light of fluid HD, ninja world peace, four wheel drive, gay marriage, love beef, free love, golf club, two guys not gay, rainbow muff dive, Harvey Milk, Sean Penn not gay, drum solo, courtside seat, safe sex, one arm push ups, Lynyrd Skynyrd. I'm not gay, I'm not gay, I'm not gay, I'm not gay.
Born this way.
I'm straight.
You were born your way.
You're gay.
Gay is straight, straight.
And
gay,
now it's
so
time,
gay,
for sexual freedom for
time
all. Sexual
change.
Freedom for
time
all. Sexual freedom for
who
all. Sexual freedom for all.
Not gay.
I know this is a visual medium, and we're recording this remotely right now, and we have a Skype video going along with it, and Jake, Dylan, and I are all just losing it. And all I can think of is the Ringo Starr. It's allowed.
It's my favorite line in the entire movie. It's such, when I saw that in the theater, I like was crying. I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, man. And I think, I can't remember for sure, and I should have looked this up closer. I think they released that song like to tease the movie.
I think you're right.
And if you really wanted to make sure only the people who already know you and find you funny were going to check out your movie, releasing that as a teaser is the way to go.
But like, they're so good at walking that line of like, you feel like you're watching like, oh, is this offensive? I don't know. But they've got that like It's Always Sunny thing where it's just the joke is all so, it's so on them that, and I think that's such a tough line to walk, but they've always done it so well. Like even back like the Dick in the Box guys who are like not appealing characters at all. But the joke is that they're clearly so ridiculous and stupid that it works. And I think Sandberg is like, I don't think he gets enough credit for being so good at that.
The career that he's putting together is like, it's going to stand up as one of the best SNL careers.
Oh, for sure.
I think even though like his actual SNL time was basically just like these digital shorts and then occasionally being like the loud or weird guy in a skit. So not a great omen for Conquest as an album that this is the lead single and the reaction isn't great and it flops. Connor would, of course, later realize that that song is very offensive. The label also has the terrible idea to release the album through appliances. They're trying to obviously one-up Radiohead's we're going to give this away for pay what you want, and U2's we're going to drop this on your iPhone and you don't have a choice about it. They're just going to put this in all your appliances, so your dishwasher, your fridge, your toaster, They're all going to come auto-loaded with Conquest.
A wonderful Maya Rudolph scene as well.
Yes, Deborah. this is part of the publicity team's idea. The publicity team, of course, led by Sarah Silverman. Their idea and desire for Connor to go beyond music and be culturally omnipresent, but also literally omnipresent and just be everywhere, which is like a really good commentary on what we ask of pop stars and what labels and PR teams ask of pop stars now, taken to the absolute extreme. The initial response to this album is not great. There's a pretty sad scene where Connor is checking the reviews and he's told that the album sold 65 copies in the first week and he thinks it means 1,000 and it does not. Pitchfork gives it a -4. Rolling Stone gives it the poop emoji. I have to wonder though, Jake, Pitchfork giving it a -4, are we thinking that 15 years from now, Pitchfork's going to re-review Conquest and give it like a 90 out of 100?
I mean, just going by their pattern, I think it's like in Popstar 2, it'll be the Style Boys will release their new album and then Pitchfork will have to go back and reassess the early career, solo career of Connor and be like, you know what? This isn't quite so bad.
Yeah. Equal rights isn't that offensive. We never really find out in the movie what the second single is. We know what the biggest song in his live act is, and we know what the biggest song in terms of Saturday Night Live digital short crossover was. It is fucking insane. It's called Finest Girl, parentheses, Bin Laden song.
Finest girl I ever met in my whole life. Wanna take her home, make her my wife. Knew she was a freak when she started talking. She said, fuck me like we fucked Bin Laden. Ooh, that girl was a freak. She said she wanted me to fuck her harder than the military. Fuck Bin Laden. Fuck Bin Laden. Fuck Bin Laden. She wanted to fuck me harder than the U.S. government. Fuck Bin Laden.
She was a freaky kind of girl. Kept up on current events from all around the world. More specifically, one event. The time Osama Bin Laden got shot in the head. She said, do me like that. But I couldn't track the metaphor. That said, I can see you horny like a stegosaur. That said again, your request is so irregular. She put on a beard, I started looking at the exit door. Then a turban, then a tunic. She said, invade my cave with your special unit. I said he wasn't in a cave, but there was no stopping. She demanded that I fuck her like we
fuck Bin Laden. She wanted me to fuck her like we
fuck Bin Laden.
Oh, this girl insisted that the way we did it was merciless and exact, just like the now world famous attack that fucked Osama Bin Laden.
Oh man,
the more specifically,
you're
one
you're harboring a fugitive.
So good.
You're harboring a fugitive. That ass. My justice will be punitive. I'm a smash.
There's a reason why that was stuck in my head for 3 weeks. Like, it's such a good song.
That is batshit insane that they were even allowed to do an edited version of that for SNL.
I want to know how does your brain get there?
My brain has thought up some pretty dumb things, especially lately, but
yeah,
nothing like terrorize that. Yeah. Oh, boy. Obviously, the live performance of Finest Girl, Bin Laden song, doesn't really help Connor Farrell's tour. The numbers start to struggle enough that they go out and try to find an opening act to boost his Q rating and fill up the stadium. They find Hunter the Hungry, who I believe is a take on Tyler the Creator, played by Chris Redd. Is that your read on it, that it's
if not Tyler specifically? I think kind of the whole Odd Future crew, yeah, kind of an amalgam as one. Also, Chris Redd's really funny in this movie, and his song is also
Chris
a banger.
Redd's great, man. Also, the songs they do together are really good, like yeah, the two little kittens, and they're like licking their paws on stage. It's adorable. So yeah, I think, yeah, my take on it was early Tyler the Creator or Odd Future altogether. If it's a take on Tyler the Creator, the other thing we have to look forward to in Popstar 2 is like a really good Hunter the Hungry album.
Just like earnest, Igor. Just really earnest and well-made.
Yeah. So we have that to look forward to. It'll be great. So they initially make a few tracks together, and part of the live show is them performing together. But Hunter Starr begins to overshadow Connors, which leads to further trouble and Hunter playing some uncool pranks on Connor and then them basically just beefing to where Connor bottoms out, leaves, and he kind of sees his rock bottom, goes home to his mom's. His mom, who, by the way, is touring with Fall Out Boy, so he has the place to himself. Connor for real's mom, come on Columbia House Party.
Yeah, really? I'm sure she has thoughts on Corktree. Or maybe she's a mania girl.
Yeah, I mean, if you're touring with Fall Out Boy in 2016 when this movie came out.
Light him up.
Yeah, light him up. All right, so Connor's rock bottom kind of sees him realize that he was not great to his bandmates, and Owen had a lot of the producing talent. He goes to see Owen live perform, and Owen's performance is no good because he can't sing at all, but some of the piano and beats that he's laying down are great. Eventually, the parent trapping works, and he goes to visit Lawrence, where they all get back to their roots, which are smoking a ton of weed and writing weirdo songs. The big redemption moment for Connor for real comes when the Poppies, which is their version of the MTV Music Awards or whichever music award show you want, they offer him a closing spot because someone else gets arrested for murder. I believe it's Taylor Swift, but I can't remember for sure. So he has 6 minutes and he turns it down, but then the rest of the group are like, no, like you should do it. And there's that ridiculous scene where it's like, no, it's like how Method Man was in Wu-Tang Clan, but he also did stuff as Method Man, but he was still in the Wu-Tang Clan. And how, yeah, and they just go through every Wu-Tang member. So he kind of realizes he can have both, and his idea is to do one Style Boys song and one of his own, and then they get cut for time. So what they do is they do like a mashup that starts with Bin Laden's song and goes into Style Boys for Life, which was their big song. You get to see Usher do the donkey roll with them finally, which he's been excited to do through the entire mockumentary as one of the voices.
The Ernest Usher cameo is one of the better celebrity cameos in the movie, I think.
Yeah, Timberlake's a great one too. Timberlake is good. As Mr. Fish, as the chef and Mr. Fish. Oh yeah, the Usher, by the way. Can we need some respect for Usher as part of the like Paul Rudd not aging
group? Totally.
Usher looked older than this in She's All That. I watched She's All That recently for some reason. The reason being that it's good. But yeah, he looks older in She's All That than he looks in Popstar. Money is wonderful.
Serious. So much money also.
The climax then is he starts to play Bin Laden's song. It goes into Style Boys for Life. And then they play this new song that they created with Lawrence's notebooks from On the Farm, Owen's new beats, Connor as a singer. It also features Mr. Fish, and it features frequent Lonely Island contributor Michael Bolton, who's just like an unofficial member of Lonely Island at this point for some reason. That song is Incredible Thoughts.
Incredible thoughts.
Dove in the pitch black night, yeah. A raindrop falls from tremendous heights, a wave crashes off of a cliff in Scotland, a child bites an apple but the core is rotten. TV is free, but what is the cost? We have GPS and yet we're still lost. A carrot in the desert, a camel in the garden, a man with giant ears begging your pardon. What if a garbage man was actually smart? A common misconception that we're tearing apart. Into a dog, dog food is just food. Into a sock, a mansion's just a big shoe. A milk dud sitting in the acid rain. A house cat addicted to the cocaine. No teeth, unlimited floss. These are just a few of our incredible thoughts.
Incredible thoughts, incredible mind. Too many great ideas inside. It's a miracle my head can contain them. My spectacular brain for all humankind. Can't you ever think about space and time? Now it's time to share them with the people. My brain is a genius. I'm so overwhelmed. How did my brain conceive them?
Okay, so I have two things here. The first one is that song is basically just the Galaxy Brain meme, but as a song.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's...
The second is, what is the deal with Michael Bolton and the Lonely Island?
I mean, it's wild to me how they seemingly single-handed, or I guess three-handedly like revived his career. Like he went from in the span of, I guess, a little over a decade, he went from being a literal running punchline in Office Space, where he's like the he's insulted and looked down on as like a shitty.
Why am I the one who should change my name? He's the one who sucks.
Exactly. And I feel like that was the predominant view of Michael Bolton in like the early 2000s, that he was just like a shitty, like, I guess him and like Michael McDonald were kind of in the same world. And Michael McDonald gets ripped on in 40-Year-Old Virgin. And then he did, I guess the Jack Sparrow song was the first one.
Which is just a ridiculous thing.
Yeah, and now he's like has a comedy special on Netflix. It's
that The Lonely Island wrote and right. produced.
So it's I don't know how, like, part of me feels like they picked him because he was like a joke, but like another part of me, because of how they write and their clear reverence for the music they make, where like maybe they just genuinely loved Michael Bolton and just like wanted him on their songs.
Yeah, which, hey, it works in this case, I guess. The Jack Sparrow one, I don't find the Jack Sparrow thing funny without the video. Yeah. Like, if you listen to a Lonely Island album, some of the songs are still funny, but the Jack Sparrow one really needs the video of Michael Bolton, like, cosplaying Jack Sparrow. So the soundtrack from Popstar is 28 songs. You can buy the vinyl, as I mentioned, on thelonelyisland.com. They basically took the entire soundtrack and made it as if it were Conquest. There are some songs from before Conquest in the canon of the movie, some songs from other artists who are just involved in the Popstar universe. But it's I'd imagine it's a pretty cool piece of memorabilia if you're a big movie fan or a big Lonely Island fan. Again, mistake to not release it as Thriller also, because to have that cover, I would have. The reception, we talked about the reception to Conquest, which was not great. The reception to Popstar was not as was it wasn't bad, but it certainly wasn't what they were hoping. The movie made $9.5 million at the box office on a $20 million budget. So that's not particularly good. But like Hot Rod before it, it has reached cult success status. It has a 79% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, 68% on Metacritic. Had some pretty positive reviews of, you know, writers who were basically like, even if this isn't your style of humor, there's enough relevance here about the modern music scene. And then the soundtrack hit number one on the comedy albums chart and number 69 on the US Billboard 200. So the soundtrack did pretty well too. Jake, how many times have you watched Popstar, and like how well does it hold up on rewatch for you?
I actually think it holds up better on rewatch for me. I think I saw it once in the theater. I know that. And I loved it. But I was also, not completely in my right mind when I saw it the first time. And so I remember when I rewatched it, I had trepidation because I was like, oh, did I just really like it because of that? Or is it genuinely funny? And I think it's as I get older and I become more accepting and genuinely enjoying like pop music, the more the movie hits for me, because now that I'm more familiar with the genre and with sort of the top 40 in 2020, so to or whatever year world, it's like so many of the jokes are so specific, but are all to your point about, and the reviews point about the relevance is, I think it's so relevant and so densely packed with jokes that I think I've watched it like 5 or 6 times maybe in my life, and I've yet to have one where I'm like, okay, I get, like, it's still, it's one of those movies I'm pretty sure I could throw on whenever, and if not like roll on the floor laughing anymore, I'm gonna be smiling the whole time.
Yeah, The Lonely Island do this extremely well in general, but they've had some misses. It kind of highlights, you know, I know you have feelings on what comedy music works well for you. And I think, you know, there's that balance of, do you make good songs that are funny? Do you make straight up parody songs? Do you just kind of do your own, like this, you know, there's a genre of music that's kind of just comedy stuff that's, you know, that's not for me. There's the straight parody, which is obviously the Weird Al stuff where there's musical talent there and certainly lyrical talent, but they are straight parodies. And then there's this kind of stuff where it's like, oh, it's really good music. You just like drop nonsense lyrics over top of it. They are not without misses, no. though. And I bring this up as our effectively our aftermath segment that we normally do for an album, which is to say, I really did not like their Bash Brothers rap. I thought that that was going to be in the vein of Popstar. I thought it was going to be like a mockumentary about the steroid era Oakland Athletics. Instead, it was like a 25-minute rap album that just, it didn't do it for me. This is a song from it called Oakland Nights featuring Sia. You can see where the Lonely Island elements are still there, but it lacks that. I mean, first of all, you're going back to 20, 30 years ago, so the relevance isn't quite as biting, but also you take it out of the context of a funny storyline, and it's just kind of a bunch of songs sung from the perspective of Jose Canseco, and it's just not all the way there for me. This is Oakland Nights, though.
Step into my crib, everything smell like cool water, and if you're coming to mine, you know it's Drakkar Noir. Now have a seat on this couch made of horse leather. I'm told the horse that it's from could run fast and far. That's richly sexy. Tell the maitre d' at your booty to expect me. I'm solo when I'm flexing, but don't try to solo flex me. Nordic track all day. Squats in the living room, can I get a witness? The greatest aphrodisiac is physical fitness. So take off your gas and let go your stress. A custom class is shit. It's what comes next.
Silkworms and kimonos. Silkworms. Polo, she's athletic days, but all those silkworms and kimonos, a pound of type of drum in your dojos, embedded blazers, filing papers, no more, it's time for kimonos, silkworms, and kimonos. I'm a pro when I bone, but I do it pro bono. You work hard day, so you deserve the
Oakland Nights.
We're the Oakland Knights of the round table. Plus, I'll take you out to pizza at the round table. Pizza, my favorite pizzeria in Oakland. But bring the change, cause you can't wear your silk robin.
Did you watch the Bash Brothers one,
I did, and I had the same thoughts as you. When I saw they were making it, I was really excited because I was like I was just saying, like, the thing that works so well about a lot of their humor, and especially in something like Popstar, is the extreme specificity of their jokes. And, like, making a Bash Brothers mockumentary is extremely specific. I was like, oh, that's perfect. And then when it just turned out to be like, I forget, there's a term for it, whatever Lemonade is. I forget what they call it, like the long form music video with like multiple songs. I was disappointed to learn that's what it was. And then, yeah, it also, I don't even think I finished it, to be honest, like after 10 minutes, I was like, I get it. And I feel like it could have been really good had it, cause they made, they've made a couple like short sports mocks, I think, or at least they've been involved in the production, like the Tour de France one, I think. And the tennis one.
That's great. And that's kind of what I was thinking, is like, you take those rap songs and it's 20, 25 minutes worth of rap songs. You spread those out over like 85, 90 minutes and you get like, you know, you get the Jim Nantz cameo, you get the Barry Bonds cameo, you get, or the Ken Griffey cameo, and you build that out the same way as you did Popstar. And you could have a really funny, like, cultural snapshot of what everything was like in the '80s. But instead, and you know, I think it probably hurts too, that they're too like fairly scrawny guys trying to play Maguire and I can say go, which I get works for part of the comedic thing. Anyway, that one just doesn't click for me, which is rare because I'm in general a big Lonely Island fan. I do think, though, you know, if you look at the entirety of the work, the SNL digital shorts, the three albums they released, Hot Rod, Popstar, and the Bash Brothers thing, Popstar is kind of where it all comes together the best. Now, I love Hot Rod, but Hot Rod is kind of this standalone thing. Whereas Popstar, I feel like there's a ton of, you know, it's funny prepping for this episode and rewatching the movie. It's funny how many things we've already talked about on episodes like come up in Popstar. And I think that's what makes it as good as it is beyond just them being so funny. And things like, you know, obviously the albums being released through appliances is a dig on U2. And there's the constant social media availability of like Connor for real at the start being like just jacked off on Snapchat or whatever. You know, trying to leverage every monetization opportunity where like one of the quotes is like, nobody's doing appliance shit.
And I think it's funny. It works too, because like, yes, you're right. It is referencing very specific things that happen that may not always be remembered, but that notion of like trying to monetize everything as an artist, that's always going to be funny. Like the fridge thing, even if, you know, in 10 years, if you forget or never knew about, you know, you two putting it in on everyone's phones, that bit is still funny. And I think that's what this movie does so well, where like the specific references work if you know them, but if you don't, it's still like a commentary on, you know, capitalism and specifically music capitalism and how the industry works.
And then there's the added wrinkle that like the Connor story and the Style Boy story is like a relatable one where like, yeah, solo artists have gone away from their groups and there's some kind of, you know, it may be not external, but internal conflict of how much do you want to be associated with that versus your own thing. Connor looks at Style Boys, you know, we talked a lot in the Weezer episode about how they didn't want to play songs from Pinkerton for a really long time. And it's like, okay, well, you know, it's not dissimilar from that. I'm sure if we did a Beyonce episode and talked about her history with Destiny's Child, a similar thing
for sure. Up.
So I think that's part of it too. And like, I'd love to ask like a musician what they thought of it. Obviously there are a ton of musicians on making cameos here, like Carrie Underwood, Nas, Mariah Carey with a really funny one. So, I mean, obviously it resonates for them too, beyond just the humor probably and the chance to, you know, get a movie credit. We now get to the segment of the show where we'd normally rank songs off the album, which I have no interest in doing for this one, I don't think. So I just want to open it up for your favorite bits or moments from the movie. We'll ditch the music side of things and just talk about the movie for a few.
I think my favorite bit in the movie is Bill Hader's guitar tech, who just loves flatlining. It's such a random, like, 2 seconds. But I don't know if it's just because I love Bill Hader so much and everything he does makes me laugh, but it's just like, it's such an odd character beat that just completely goes away. And the fact that he seems to be a shitty guitar tech, I really enjoy because he's dropping all the guitars.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's focused on flatlining. Right.
I love that. I love the Ringo line, obviously, after Equal Rights.
It's allowed.
Pretty much everything Tim Meadows does, I really enjoy.
Tony.
That's one of the other great bits. I feel like Tim Meadows is. I know he's like had a very good career by any measure, but like, someone make Tim Meadows like a starring vehicle already.
You don't remember The Ladies Man?
Other than the one that doesn't like bomb and pause his career for 4 years.
Yeah, I think you only get one shot at that maybe. One as a like. If you're a character actor, comedic character actor, I think you only get one shot at a main role. You get your superstar or you get your ladies man.
Yeah, fair enough.
My favorite of the running cameos voicing the mockumentary is RZA. Like, RZA is just the best through all of it. ASAP's is really good too, where he's like touring's tough for everyone right now, that's why I gotta do ASAP Crunchables, which is just like Lunchables. But RZA has the line, the higher you get the harder you fall, ask any coconut. And it just kills me every single time.
RZA's especially, because it's like all of them are, but like all of the cameos are, other than like, you know, the Seal bit, like all of the interviews, I guess, are just played so straight that like someone like RZA, who is like one of the most respected hip hop voices and producers in like music history, being stupid, but like with a like straight face to it, like that balance works so well. And I think they
have Questlove doing the same thing. Yeah,
like I remember when I saw it, I couldn't believe they got all these guys to do this. And it if they hadn't, I don't think it would work nearly as well.
Ask any coconut. the other one I like too is like Sarah Silverman just openly hating Connor's music and Style Boy's music. It's like, it's not what I listen to, but it seems to make a lot of people a lot of money. So. Yep, that's indicative of the industry, I think.
Sums it up.
Jake, we got to pick one of these nonsense songs for the mixtape B-side.
I mean, I think you got to go Finest Girl.
Oh, man. All right. The Bin Laden song going on the mixtape B-side.
You're welcome to pick another one.
No, we'll try to find, in the episodes that follow, we'll try to find songs that also comment on the Iraq war. So there's like a little theme to that chunk of the mixtape's B-side. Oh, man. Finest Girl, Bin Laden song, going on the mixtape. Oh, boy. All right. Jake, I think that's pretty much wraps us up for Popstar, I think.
I think so. That was fun.
It was fun. I hope that people, before they listen to this, rewatch the movie so that it's a little fresher for them and they laughed along with us.
Me too. Or they go watch it after.
Yeah, or you can go watch it after. Or if you haven't seen it yet, please tell us if this is your first time watching it and give us a breakdown of what you thought of Popstar if it was your first time watching it. Also, if you think of it and have the time, ratings and reviews help us out. Keep tuning in with us here on Columbia House Party. And thanks so much for listening, guys.